Trust me. You can trust him. You can loan him. So I am theoretically liable. If he doesn't pay you, you can collect from me. So what's the basis of that chiyuv? Apparently, you lost money lending to somebody who wasn't trustworthy because I told you to do it. So therefore, you can collect from me because you lost money based on trusting me. Which is how the Ritva explains the din of Arev in Bava Asra and Kedushin. That's how he explains the concept. The reason a cosigner is liable is because you trusted me and spent money, so now I have to cover that. So too, if I trusted the workers, or the workers trusted me to pay them, and now they lose out, I have to pay. And the Mordechai had a slightly different take on that, which has an afkamina, that essentially the Mordechai understands that when you enter into such a relationship, you basically explicitly agree that if I cause you loss by my reversing the terms, I'll pay for it. So those were essentially the different views that we saw so far in terms of where this chiyuv comes from. Everybody up to date? Any questions on anything? Everybody good? Sorry? The Mordechai is similar to the Ritva, but it seems to be different in that the Mordechai basically says that when I enter into this relationship, that you could lose money because you're trusting me, and if I pull out, or if I don't do my job, you lose money. I explicitly say that if you lose out because of this, I'll cover it. And the Ritva doesn't require you to actually say that, it's just that if there's a loss that's caused by my promise, I'm liable for it. So the Mordechai seems to require it more explicitly said. So those are the basic views that we've seen. We started to talk a little bit about nafkaminas between the different views. And we spent some time last week talking about some differences that may play out. So a broad difference, and that's also halacha l'maisa, very potentially practical. So we've said so far that the boss can never say, I'm not going to pay, because Kimli, I follow the view of Amar Rami Rutenberg, I'm not obligated in the first place. Right? We said that view isn't quoted in Shulchan Aruch, it's not quoted in the Sman Neshach, it doesn't make our halachic radar screen, so the boss is not allowed to say that. Right? But what if you have a situation where some of the reasons that we just mentioned, the five or six different approaches, some apply and others don't. So then it's possible to say the boss theoretically could get off the hook. Because the boss could say, well, I just gave you a toaster from the rush and the Ritva, and Piosik, and everybody else, all the different reasons, Garmi, and Dover Avod, and Arev, etc., etc. So in your case, the Arev rule applies, but the Garmi rule doesn't apply. So I'll say, Kimli, that it's only Garmi that's the real reason. And therefore, I won't pay you. So that might be valid. You follow the difference? To get out of the whole concept of the boss paying, which is recorded in Shulchan Aruch, that he can't say, Kimli, I hold like the minority opinion that I don't have to pay. But if it's a scenario where some of these explanations apply and some don't, then it is possible he could say, I hold like the explanations that pater me, and therefore I'm not going to have to pay you, and I can invoke the muchzak's benefit. So that's theoretically possible. So what would you say about the following scenario? This is something that the Aruch HaShulchan discusses. Let's say the whole premise that the boss has to pay is because the workers could have found other work. And instead of them finding other work, they took the job of me. What if they come to me and they say, listen, we could have found other work, and we didn't take it because we relied on you. And I disagree. I say, it's not true. You couldn't have found other work. I made up this unique opportunity that didn't exist before. So I didn't cost you anything. Because if I hadn't come around, you wouldn't have any other such job to take. What would you say about that case? Is the boss obligated to pay?
What does he mean by different? Like different pay or different?
Let's say at all. You know, they couldn't have found any other work. And they say, yesterday when you hired us, we could have found other work, but we didn't take it because we took your job.
There just seems, I should talk to the boss, and seems to say that the boss doesn't want to pay.
Who says that? Right in terms of the Arev story.
No.
With the Holchu.
Oh, wait, which question?
Yeah, I think you might be thinking something else. But
The Ketzoros, I think, is a medayik from the Shach's interpretation of the worker. The Shach means the workers need to say explicitly, either go find a replacement if she refers to mean that it's on the workers to prove. It's on the person who's claiming has to prove that in fact was indeed the situation. So in that case, the workers have the thief to say that, yes, we would have found other work, and if they can't prove that, the Baal Bayis probably wouldn't have to pay.
Well, that's how the Aruch HaShulchan assumes. The Aruch HaShulchan assumes that essentially the burden of proof is on the worker. But since this is all contingent on the assumption that they could have gotten other work, that they passed up to take this chance, so that fact is so important, if it's in dispute, so then it'll be up to the workers to prove it because they're essentially being motzi mechaveru. So aleihem harayah.
Is it the same thing in the other way? If the workers are choser and the Baal Bayis claims that there is no replacement workers and the workers claim there are replacement workers, and there would be
The question is not so much are there no replacement workers now. The question is, what would things have been like yesterday? But yesterday, when I hired you, so did I miss out an opportunity because I could have hired somebody else? Or, no, I didn't miss out an opportunity. This was the only person who could have done the job. So had he not come around, there wouldn't have been anything anyway. So that's where the case gets more comparable. Presumably, you could say, you would theoretically be able to say motzi mechel arayi in both cases, except that the polem are not being motzi from him in that direction. So it gets if he's not.
The Baal Bayis is trying to be sofer on that.
Right.
So the question is, prove that there were indeed other workers to hire.
Correct. The question is, what does sofer aleihem mean? Is that motzi mehem? If he's not paying them in the first place.
We follow the Rifa's interpretation. If the Dov Rabbah was a hesed moment and there is a real chiyuv on him, then he can actually be motzi.
Possibly. Right. So let's get to that. We have to get to what their chiyuv of Dov Rabbah towards him is. That's what we'll have to close this off with. So yeah,
say that it's on them for motzi mechaveru l'arayah because it's on them, because I don't know why it would be on them, okay? But even way would it be?
Well, you don't know why. I mean, like, if they're claiming they should get paid.
So they're the one right? being motzi for the most of.
Right. So they're not working, but they're claiming they should get paid because he made them lose out because they could have gotten the job the day before, and now they can't.
So if it's like Lenka Megam Lila Mel, so then they'd be in trouble because it's on them to.
Well, or maybe if they have no proof, there's no way to prove it, so then maybe, and the claim is somewhat ambiguous. You know, clearly, they're never going to be able to prove it 100%, because it's not the kind of scenario where you can really, right, you're trying to prove what would have happened the day before.
Right.
So that's very hard to actually prove. So in order for this to be a legitimate shiloh, it has to be somewhat murky. We really don't know what the market was, and there's a fair basis, both positions are reasonable. Right, that the boss can make a reasonable case that there would not have been any work for them yesterday, and the workers can make a reasonable case, no, we would have found something. So if they both have somewhat of a reasonable claim, so who wins?
Baal Bayis.
So it seems like the Baal Bayis should win. That's what the Aruch HaShulchan's position is. Now, you could say differently. Maybe this depends on what the reason for the Chiyuv is in the first place. Anyone want to try to pursue that? Why should it make a difference?
Say the Baal Bayis would be responsible.
Yeah, or to say that the Hamotzi Mechavel Varai, the whole burden is on the workers to prove they could have gotten the job. This is something that, like many things, is discussed in that beautiful Sefer Mishpatei HaChoshen. That it would seem to be that Svara makes sense if we're coming from the Garmi perspective. We're saying that the boss caused them a hezek. Cause them a loss. So then, to say that that's true, they have to kind of prove that that's true. They have to be able to assert that that's actually the case. That there's a difference between things with this guy and without this guy. But if it's the Dover HaAvid situation, let's say, then maybe you don't require such a high threshold. They entered into an agreement. Now they can't find any other work. Maybe we don't need to necessarily prove absolutely that this is different from what would have been otherwise. Possible. It really may depend on what the reason is. Also, if you follow the Arif perspective, that essentially, if I enter into this deal with you, and now there are expenses because of my entering into the deal, not because of guarantee, but simply because of commitment, so then maybe also we don't require such a high threshold of proof. Maybe as long as you have a reasonable expectation that they're right, it's not totally crazy. Maybe the Arif thing would also kick in. So whether or not the Aruch HaShulchan's position is the only way to see things might depend on what the reason is. So that itself is an interesting thing to keep in mind. What do you say about the following question? So let's take again the Aruch HaShulchan's model. So let's say, Jonathan, you hired me for a job, then you pull out, and I come to you and say, I could have gotten another job. You're not sure if it's true. Who knows? Maybe yes, maybe no. I can't prove it conclusively. But, you know, as far as you know, maybe I'm right. You just don't know. It's kind of a bari v'shemo. But you said there's a chi of latzei sidei shamayim, that maybe you should pay me, even though I can't force it bezdin on that proof. Most mechaber lo haraya. What would you say about that?
I was the garmi.
Sorry?
I was sort of the garmi then.
Yeah, except you weren't really the garmi because we can't really conclusively establish that you actually caused the loss. So Bezdin's not ready to impose it on you. But, you know, you recognize I might be right. What would you think, Adin?
We said that grama is even his chayav b'dei shamayim, didn't we?
Grama is generally chayav b'dei shamayim.
Yeah, so we would say that maybe even if it's not garmi, then we probably assume it falls back to grama, which means that maybe I should pay anyway, but if it's the Dabar al-Avud possibility, then if it's not even clear that I caused you to not work, then presumably I wouldn't even know that I could be closer to pay you. But if it's the Arya situation, then there are very few situations in which you wouldn't be Chayav.
At least with Eshemayim.
Yeah, at least with Eshemayim.
See, it's also interesting, so we want to invoke the difference between Grama and Garmi, that also gets into the somewhat unresolved question of when does something become Grama and when does something become Garmi. But if the issue is, the difference between the two is how likely the damage is, that maybe Grama, there's a time delay, so it's not really clear that it actually is going to happen, and Garmi is more definite, so then maybe that itself affects this question too. Now, the Mishpatei Achoshen, he considers a question which would radically affect the scenario described in that email that we first sent out that prompted some of these discussions. To very much affect the actual practice if this consideration is true. Until now, we've basically been discussing is, let's say, again, let's take that model, I hired a car to take me to the airport, and then I pulled out. So, okay, if he comes and says, I have to pay him anyway, he has a time. Shulchan Aruch says, I have to pay him. But what if that's not the question? What if I'm the guy who hires the driver, and I call up the rabbi and I say, listen, am I allowed to pull out? I tell the rabbi that I called the driver, and I told him I'm thinking of pulling out because my friend offered to take me for free. And the driver said, listen, I could have gotten more work yesterday, but now I won't be able to anymore. I'm going to lose out. Am I allowed, b'chatchila, to do it? Let's say it's the scenario we're just talking about. Okay, let's say he's not going to be able to prove that he could have gotten more work yesterday. Right, so let's say we're working off the Aruch HaShulchan scenario where I'm not going to actually have to pay him if I pull out. But we're not having the argument after I pull out, we're having the argument before I pull out. Right, if the driver comes to me a week later and says, listen, I want you to pay me for last week's misjob, because I lost a day of work that I could have had otherwise. And I say, no, it's not true. These jobs are few and far between. Nobody else would have hired you that day. All right, so then the Aruch HaShulchan, the burden's on him to prove that he lost out. But what if this is happening the day before? I call the car for Tuesday, I call him up on Monday, I say, I want to pull out. And the driver says, no, it's too late, I can't get any more jobs now for that day, and I could have otherwise. Don't pull out. What would you say to the rider? Is it mutter for him to pull out?
I want to say no, this doesn't seem right, but I mean, like, according to what we were saying before, that if he's he can't prove anything on you, he can't prove that what he was going to get yesterday.
Okay, so that seems reasonable, but the premise of the question, which I haven't explained yet, is that there's a difference between after the fact collecting damages and before the fact in terms of proof. Dan, you want to comment on that?
Yeah, I'd say one of two things. Either, going back to what we explained, like the different reasons for the targumas, it could be that in some senses, if you're not purposely allowed to do something that will cause targumas because maybe targumas is something like, the reason for targumas is because you've done something wrong, did you know this mind? Or also, I would say that maybe we could say that you're the one being able to see him, and it's on, if you can prove that there's no other way he would have gotten work, then you're allowed to back out. But unless you can prove that definitively, then you might not, then you're kind of the one being mostly him in this situation. So he would have the upper hand, and you would be able to coerce you into staying.
That's definitely a fascinating application of Hamotze Mechaber Lehoraya. Normally what we mean by that is you want to collect money from someone else. Not necessarily that you want to cause him a loss, or do something that would cause him a loss. But what's entering into the equation that's new here is the following. Let's talk about, for a second, Brahma. Let's say it's not even Garmin. Right, so Brahma b'nezikin is patur. If I cause you damage, you can't come to Bezin and collect from me. But that doesn't mean that it's mutter l'chatchila. To cause somebody else a loss, even indirectly, is very likely usur. And it's interesting, in general, we spoke about this a little bit in Parshas Mishpatim, that when it comes to Nezikin, there seems to be a split between the Tashlum in Nezikin, the fact that the Torah says you have to pay if you damage somebody's property, and an Isser L'Chachila to cause that damage. And almost everyone assumes that there is an isser to cause somebody damage, even if you have your checkbook there ready to pay right away. It's two separate concepts. And it's interesting that the Rashba, it's worth knowing about, Rashba at the beginning of Bava Kama, on Daf Beis, and the Gemara there talks about a short tam and a short mua. Right, we know, we read about this in the Parsha 2 weeks ago, that if you have a shor that's established as a shor naga, a shor that has been already proven to be a shor that damages other people or animals, so then there's a higher threshold of obligation. And if it's a shor tam, it's a lower threshold of obligation. So in the context of one question related to that, the Gemara has a possibility, ema kula muedes. Let's assume that we should tilt towards the side of Mu'at. We should assume the animal is more chayav. So the Rashba over there asks, why would you say we'll assume l'chumra that you're more chayav? Hamotzi mechaver l'horayi. If we're talking about paying for damages, the burden of proof is always in favor of the motzah. So we should tilt the equation in favor of assuming you don't have to pay. Right, you follow the question? If I'm not sure whether something should be called a shor mu'ad or a shor tam, so how would I tilt things? To say that it's a shor tam, you pay less. So the Rashba over there writes that because we're talking about the potential of damaging somebody else, so that's a safek iser. That essentially, before the fact, the possibility of causing a damage to another, that's not a suffix mamu. That's not a motze mechaver l'horayim. There, the burden is on the one who may cause the damage, because that's a yisur of the Torah to be mazik somebody. And if you're in that position of a suffix, so we should say suffix l'chomra, violating yisur d'araisa. And to give you another example, by the way, in terms of the whole Grama situation, the Chafetz Chaim, in much of his writings on Lashon Hara, takes the perspective that the Isser Lashon Hara is a function of Mazik, but if I speak badly about somebody, I'm likely to cause him problems. So you'll say, isn't that a Grama? If I cause a guy to lose out on a job or a shidduch or whatever because I spoke badly about him, isn't that a Grama? So you'll say, yeah, it's a Grama. It means he can't come to Beis Din and collect money from me afterward. But it's also l'chachila to do that. You're not allowed to do something which will cause somebody damage, even if it'll be indirect, and you won't be able to come afterwards and collect money from them. So now, what about in this case? Let's say it's the Aruch HaShulchan's model, the guy can't collect. We don't call it a garmi, we'll call it a grama. The guy can't collect afterwards. But he's coming to me before the fact, and he says, if you do this, you're going to cause me damage. Should we say that's a safek isser, and we shouldn't let you pull out? That would have a great impact on the case that was discussed in that email, right? Because if it's forbidden for you to do beforehand, that will definitely affect how you address the situation. What do you think of that question?
Is it really a safek isser?
Right. So then the question is, what is the threshold for it to be a safek, basically? At what point? You could say it's always a safek. So how is it going to be enough to rise to the level of a safek? So the Mishpatei Choshen talks about this. So he assumes that if it's just because he says so, you have no other reason to believe it other than him saying so. So then that probably doesn't create enough of a safek for you to have to respond on a moral level. But if there's some credibility to it besides him, there is some basis to think he might be right, even if he wasn't saying it. So then, Taka, if you really are worried personally that you might be causing him a loss because he may have had other opportunities and he relied on you, so then indeed it might be the case that it's also to pull out because of a suffix nazikin, even if the threshold is not enough that he could prove afterwards and collect from you. Hi.
How would the case change if, like, let's say both parties would lose out if either outcome happened? Like, if this guy ordered this car, pulls out because his company says, what are you doing ordering this car? You're charging the company too much money. We can't, like, afford that.
I mean, the company that employs him says that he's working for too cheap?
No, he's saying that, why are you ordering
car? The person who needs a ride works for a company and his expense budget is not going to pay for it. Okay. So that factor into things.
Because if he doesn't cancel the ride, he's going to be causing his company a loss.
Right. So that's part of the equation also, and there's an extensive literature about this. It relates a little bit to something we talked about at the beginning, but we didn't get into details, that if he has a good reason for doing it, that something changed on his side. So here, if he doesn't have the funds to cover it, so that itself may justify pulling out. So the nuances of when he's still liable if he has a good reason, and there's a positive good reason and a negative good reason. So in the case we're talking about, it's a positive good reason. He has the money to pay for the ride, but he has an opportunity to go for free. So clearly that's a big difference, so then he should have the right to take the free ride without, tarumas. But what if it's a negative reason, he simply can't afford the ride anymore? So then you would think, well, the more so he's justified in pulling out. So if his company is paying for the ride, then the company says we're not going to pay for it. So then presumably, if he committed money he didn't have, mistakenly, in good faith, and that we also discussed a little bit last week, it might be also a difference between some of the reasons, that if he's a shogeg, he thought that he needed the ride that day, and it turns out he made a mistake in good faith. So then if it's about garmi, so garmi might be a knas. So it could be that we don't impose a knas on a shogeg. So if he had a good faith mistake, then maybe he's not subject to the knas of garmi. So there's a couple of nuances which may all derive from that. Hi.
In the case of suffix is sort of backing out sort of l'chachila on the taxi driver, we would still say, even if it is no isser, let's say, we would still say he has taromis, though, no?
Okay. Presumably. The question is, I guess, what that would mean practically.
What
does taromis mean to us or not?
Right, what's the getter? Is it a punishment? Is he yelling at you, or is it sort of just...
Right, and whether taromis means that he did something morally wrong.
So according to that machlokas, that would tell us if we're dealing with the issa here, not with the
man. Yes and no, it'll tell you about a different level of issa, right? The whole Tarumas discussion is assuming that there is no wages lost to this guy.
Right.
And still there may or may not be an issa. Here we're kind of taking things to a different level, having dealt with the Tarumas component. Now the question is, maybe there's more than that. Maybe there's actual wages lost, but it's not proven. So it takes things one step further into potential Isser category. Adin?
So in this kashi, even if we do say it is Isser for you to back out beforehand, can he still compel you to not back out, or can Basin do that, or is it that it's Isser?
Yeah, presumably Basin cannot compel. Because you'd have to have it really be the same kind of threshold of proof. You'd have to be able to establish it. And if you can't establish it, it's really more of a suffix for you. It's hard to say that Bezdin can.
Even if you could prove 100% that you're like a second half of the mission, like the Harabi, that he's causing you damage, you basically.
You could prove it 100%, then he could also be Motsimon after the fact. So then presumably he could.
But can Basin compel you to.
Bezdin could actually make you pay, so then probably you could stop before. Except that the tool of Bezdin would probably be the Mammon. So either to compel you to do it, to follow through, or actually pay. So a very important detail, which is also somewhat subject to machlokas, and also draws on everything that we've seen so far. And this, if you see, this part was touched upon in the email from the Beis Avad, is that this whole premise, this is something that's discussed in the Ksos, which is why one of the single most important authorities to see in this discussion is the Ksos. The Ksos does a very important yisod in that paragraph in Sifkat and Beis. He says as follows. According to him, he's not sure why you're obligated to pay at all. Right, this is Garmi, this is Minyas Rebbe. Before we get to Garmi, this is all causational. You're holding back profit instead of actually causing a real loss. Why should you have to pay? So if you recall, what did the Ksos invoke as the strongest reason to have to pay in this case? Shevis. Right? Because since the Torah has the Chiddush of Shevis, so then you see you have an obligation to pay for missed work. So here too. So says the Ksos, so therefore if it's all based on this Chiddush of Shevis, there's a limit to that. It only applies to the worker himself. If he had, let's say, tools that he profits off of, like let's say he has a horse, and if you hire him to ride his horse, so you're really doing two things. You're hiring him in his time, and he's renting you out the horse at the same time. And as the modern poskim have written, Pesach Choshen and others, so the modern model of this is he has a car. So when you hire him as a driver, he's really charging you for two things. He's charging you for his time driving you, and he's charging you because he's renting you his car during that time also. Now some drivers don't work that way, right? There are drivers who you can hire today who will drive your own car. Let's say you have a car, and for whatever reason you don't want to do the driving, so you can hire someone who will come to your house and drive your car. Now that's an interesting question. The fact that that business exists helps you to assess this question a little bit. Because maybe you have the right to assume, this is something that Ksos addresses, that when you hire a taxi driver, Ksos addresses the horse, an animal, but in the modern context of a taxi driver. So if you hire a taxi driver, maybe he's charging you for two things. His time driving and the usage of his vehicle. And if you pull out, you caused him a lost opportunity. According to the Ksos's approach, both his logic and his own conclusion, that only applies to his time. But any other profit-making tool that he has, whether it's his car, or as the Nesivus adds, stuff he would have sold, anything else that he uses to make money, the svara wouldn't apply. So whatever part of the salary was going, whatever part of the fee was going to pay for the rental of the car, that you shouldn't have to pay. According to the Ksos as developed by the contemporary Acharonim play.
I see how you can sort of say that maybe with a Umanin where you have like a skilled worker and many different tools, this is like a little bit of a tough look to make, because you would say that this person is useless to me without the car, without the horse. It's like you're only really interested in his that one use of it anyway.
Okay, so but still you could have a breakdown of the charges I'm paying for him and the car. And the fact that there are people, services you can hire, people who will drive your car, might be helpful in this, because you could then say, all right,
not
how much...
only him and you have your car.
Right, you could say, so how much does that guy charge? And how much does the taxi driver charge? And presumably the taxi driver charges more because he has to bring his car. So you would subtract one from the other, some type of approximation, and say, I'm only chayef to pay this guy based on what I would pay the guy who will drive my car. But the extra that I pay him to drive his car, that I'm not obligated to pay, according to the Ksos.
So that would be say the opposite, that if you're renting someone's chayfets, like you're renting a car that you're going to be driving yourself, and you back out, so you're renting a car for a week and you back out, you're not, since you're not being mazik him, is
exactly,
good.
That's the Ksos' point.
And for Tosos even also, would it be Garmi even?
Oh, so that's also what comes out of here, is that this whole logic should really depend on what reason you hold. But the Ksos for sure would say, based on his Shevis approach, that, yeah, if you want to rent my car, and I say I could have rented the car to somebody else, now I saved it for you, you're not chayiv, because the logic only applies to the worker, otherwise it's basically mevatel kiso. It's menias rabach. Any approach that bases the chiyuv based on the personal worker's time, rather than something else, is going to pater you in that case. However, if you say that it's not because of that, but because of garmi, and if garmi with a bari hazeka, you know, you definitely could have rented it out to somebody else, and now you can't, maybe you should still be chayiv.
You said there's a possibility that garmi is really because you're harming like the...
Right, so it gets at the lumpus of why we call this garmi. Right, you have to split the garmi reason. If the garmi reason is because it's a definite case of hezek, then maybe I could have a definite hezek with my item too. But if it's because I'm acting on the guy himself, then it wouldn't apply. Yeah, you have to split the garmi kind of logic. So that's basically an interesting question. So that should really be a machlokus, whether this Sosa's point is true, that we shouldn't have to pay for the car rental, we just have to pay for the driver. Now, the Machan Ephraim disagrees, just in the point Machan Ephraim maintains, that everything is just factored into the cost. And you know, sometimes you have other industries like this, so the barber charges you for his time, but he has all the overhead that allows him to function, so he factors that in when he makes his price. But the fact is, still, it comes out to the same thing, that it's based on he's charging you for his time. Or the doctor who needs fancy equipment in his store, in his office, rather. So, yes, he had to set his rates based on how much it cost him to have everything that he needs to work with. But at the end of the day, he's charging you for his time. So not everyone's going to agree that you can make such a distinction. When you have a worker who uses his own tools, still, the fact that tools are essentially rented out to you, it still comes out to the fact that, you say the dentist's drill is being rented out to you when he fills your tooth, you say, no, he's charging you for his time. And he can only work because he has a drill. So, yes, there is such an argument to be made, but again, you have the Kimley factor, so presumably the Ksos allows for the Kimley, that the guy who would be paying here has the right to say, I'm only going to pay just for the worker's time and not for anything else. Question about that?
I mean, I don't know specifically on that, but even if there are two separate areas, you're buying them as one thing.
Mm-hmm.
You don't get individually charged. So, like, how is that even...
You're saying like the Machan Ephraim, you think the Machan Ephraim is right. Right, so sometimes you could see why you would say differently. I mean, especially when you have different models, let's say with a driver, if the world has both jobs existing, one guy who will drive your car and one guy who will come with his own car, and they charge different amounts, sometimes it is possible to compartmentalize. You can identify that you're paying for two things here.
But those are two separate jobs.
But they're not really, right? The taxi driver is doing one job. But you know that I could also hire somebody to drive my car and he'll charge less. So that shows me what the going rate is for driving a car. And that when I'm paying the taxi driver more, it's because he has to bring his own car. So I could theoretically isolate the value of having your own car and the time spent driving.
So how would that work if there are two, if there are different rates for different taxi drivers?
You have to figure out what the average is and what the going rate is. You know, that what makes one, is one giving you some type of identifiably different service, or is there some kind of factor that differentiates them? So you have to figure out what the going rate is. It'll be the lowest going rate because, again, it's all going to be on the motzim and amuchzak, so you'll have the right to use the lower end of the going rate and then figure out how it plays out. All right, so there's another aspect of that also, which I'll push off to tomorrow because it ties into the halacha point. I'll just skip to a different point. There is also another interesting potential distinction, but it's really more theoretical, just again for this case of the taxi driver. So some of the poskim write, the Menachas Pitim quotes from the Ravid, maybe I'll give you this Ravid to look at tomorrow, that there is a difference here between a poel and a kavlan.
The Rush quotes the Ravid.
Yeah, the Shiva Kabesis quotes the Ravid against the Balamor. But the Shnei Kubetzes, the Ravid, is quoted against answering the Balamor. I'll give it to you, look at tomorrow. That, let's say, it's one thing if I say, okay, I hired you as a pole for, I hired you to work from 12 o'clock to 6 o'clock. So fine, he could have hired himself out to somebody else from 12 o'clock to 6 o'clock. But if I hired somebody for a specific task, so then he could say, the hirer, the boss could say, I didn't stop you from accepting other tasks. You do all the tasks on your own schedule. So the fact that you chose to forgo other tasks because you thought you were going to do my job, that's your problem. That's how some assume. So it gets back to the question we said last week by the bus driver, right? Is the bus driver a pole or a cobbler? On the one hand, he's kind of a cobbler, and his job is just go from point A to point B. But he's also kind of like a pole because he has to start the job at a specific time. So here also it's a little bit murky. So some of the Achronim point out that even if this is true, this distinction between a pole and a kavlan, still it has to be reasonably possible for the kavlan to take on both jobs at the same time. If the facts are such that he can't do both jobs because he's committed to your job, so then it all boils down to that. The fact is that he wasn't able to take other jobs because of your job. Call him a pole, call him a cobbler, if that's the issue, that he had to skip out other jobs because he thought he was going to be busy with yours, that would presumably be the determinative factor. So Menachas Pitim is theoretically correct if it's reasonably possible for him to do a few jobs and he, for whatever reason, decided not to take the other job because he was going to do your job. But if in real life that's not possible, presumably it would stay with this situation. So whether you want to call this driver a pole or a cobbler ties in a little bit to that bus question we spoke about last week, but also, again, it's probably less about the definition and more about the reality. Hi.
But when, like, so we assume that a cobbler can take as many jobs, he can take 1,000 jobs at once, but he's not going to get paid for any of them until he finishes. There's no time limit on how long he has to do it. So
right.
Wouldn't we say that it's on the Baal HaBayit, that, like, it's not the Kavlan's fault saying, oh, I was going to do your job and I was going to finish it very quickly. Instead of taking three jobs and spending 3 days doing all three, I'll do one job in one day and one job the next day. So why does the Baal HaBayit say, like, I think Menachas Pitim tradition, it shouldn't hold, because the Baal HaBayit, the Poel can always, or the Kavlan can always claim that I was just managing my time differently than you expected me to, but he has the right to manage his time, to manage his job acceptance for that as he wants to.
Right, he has the right to, but maybe that's his decision. That'll be his point. Because if you chose to live your life that way, that you only take one job at a time, that was your decision, but I didn't force you to do that. You didn't, for my sake, you didn't have to pass up other jobs in order to take my job. So I think that's what will come out to, that yes, you have the right to plan out your life as you want, but you can't blame it on me. So if I hired you for a job and other people could still hire you, and you could have taken all the jobs, so then you can't come to me and say you didn't take those jobs because you didn't want to.
So then how will there ever be a cobbler who's... How will you ever have to pay a cobbler? Because there's like a cobbler can always... He can accept a job because he can't start it for a year.
Right, so that's exactly his point, that if you pull out from the cobbler, you have to pay if he does the job. But if you pull out on him, so then you wouldn't necessarily have to pay him based on the premise that he could have taken a different job, because the cobbler will often have that issue that he could have still taken another job. But
he'll always have that.
Not always, because you could have theoretically. So, for example, this car situation, it's not really true that he can't drive two people in one day if it physically takes a couple hours to get from point A to point B,
well,
and people need to be at the airport at the...
We're saying that we're time to time thing, and then he's not a cop anymore.
That's, well, that gets to that same murky issue in terms of definition that we saw by the bus driver. But that's why I think the answer is, like the later Achronim say, that yes, the distinction is theoretically true, but if functionally you have the same type of time block, then it'll be treated like a poel, even if he's actually called a kavlan. And the difference between poel and kavlan will have major ramifications when we talk about poel yochalach subachatzi ayom. So that distinction is always important, but maybe in this case it'll still come out to be the same. Okay. Just to say a few more points, and we'll have to leave some of the bigger points for tomorrow. But another, also just, we'll say maybe just one more point, and then we'll leave for tomorrow, is the inverse, the davar avod for the worker to the balabas, and the sugya of halacha. We'll try to get those done tomorrow. But just, we mentioned before, just to clarify as a point of halacha lemaisa, so what is a pole bottle? That if you pull out on him, so you have, if you are actually chayiv, you have to pay him like a worker who's not actually working. So what is that rate? So I think I mentioned we had a conversation with Rabbi Reis in terms of the minig of the Beis Din, but the Taz is often quoted, the Taz is over here in Shulam and Gimel, that he says basically the rate is the half pay. But as the later post can also point out, that might be the case, but it probably depends. How do you get the number? That basically you figure out, you could ask the person theoretically, I'll ask somebody else in a similar situation, you get paid X amount to do your job. If I were to tell you that you don't have to actually do your job and you can sit home and read the newspaper and I'll pay you anyway, how much of a discount would you be willing to give me on your salary if I don't make you actually come to work? If I don't make you actually do the work, you sit home and twiddle your thumbs, how much would you take off of the salary? So that is essentially the svara that's used. And theoretically, a different industry might come up with a different number. But the basic rule of thumb is what the Taz says is a half rate. So that's a general rule that a lot of postmen thought theoretically is true. But they also said basically, hakala fi ha'inyan, that you could have different jobs that may have different calculations in that front. Some of the posts can also point out that it depends what we're talking about. That if you're talking about a day, it's different than if you're talking about a month or a year. If you're talking about a salary for a year, so people need to support their families. So if you gave them the option of sitting home twiddling their thumbs versus working hard and getting a full salary, they'll say, listen, I'd rather work hard and get a full salary because I need a full salary to support my family. But let's say, for example, somebody has a steady job and they want to take, you know, they'd be happy to take Monday off. So I say, okay, how much of a docking in pay would you accept to take Monday off and stay home? Right. So normally, the reason a person doesn't stay home on a random Monday, it's not because he can't handle losing that day. A person is employed in a yearly salary. The reason he doesn't take off Monday, it's not because he can't handle the loss of income from that day. It's because he'll lose his job if he takes off random days. He'll get in trouble at work if he takes off Monday. So let's say that wasn't a cheshbon. You're just going to, you'll take whatever your salary is per Monday. Instead of getting the full salary, you'll take less so that you can have the day off. What would that number be? So there might be a difference between a day rate versus a yearly rate. That you give me the option, I won't take it for a yearly rate because I won't be able to support my family anymore. But Monday, I would take off Monday. It won't affect my ability to support my family. The reason I don't do it normally is because I'll get fired if I take off random days. But if you'll tell me I won't get fired, how much salary reduction will I accept? So you calculate that, and that's the schar of a pole bottle, basically. So, again, it could come out to an average of a half salary, but it may also depend on the industry and have different rates. Okay, so let's just quickly review what we spoke about, then we'll daven mincha. So today we went through again the basic shitas and the fact that they could have some nafkaminas. We said that kimli, even though kimli doesn't allow the boss to get off of the whole chiyuv completely, but if some reasons apply and others don't, so then he could say kimli that I hold like the reasons that don't apply to me, and I'm pater for that. And we talked about, since this is all premised on the idea the workers could have gotten other work before you hired them to you, So what if there's a dispute about that fact? The boss says, I don't know that that's true, and the workers claim that it is true. So we saw the Aruch HaShulchan said, Hamotzimei Chaver L'Varaya, the burden is on the workers to prove that it's true. And we discussed how really whether the Aruch HaShulchan is right or not depends on what the real reason is for the Chiyuv. Maybe if it's a Garmi reason, then yes, Taka, the burden should be on the workers to be Motzimei Chaver L'Varaya Maraya. But if it's the other reasons, it might be what to distinguish. And then we talked about in a situation like that where there isn't a clear Chiyuv Mamon on the boss, so is there a Chiyuv Latzlis L'Idei Shamayim? And very, very relevant, what about before the fact? Maybe even if we can't be collecting from him afterwards, maybe there's an Isser for him to pull out before the fact. Maybe that's a Safek Gromos Nezikin, and it should be a Safek Isser. Maybe he's not allowed to do that. And then we discussed the possible chiluk that was suggested, that if he really is Masopek, that maybe he's causing him a loss, maybe indeed there is a Safek Isser Nezikin. But if it's only based on the fact they're claiming it and he has no other reason to say so, then that doesn't necessarily rise to the level of a suffix for him. And then we discussed also the very important distinction that the Ksos makes based on his personal preference of Sheves is the reason that it only applies to the money that you would make through your labor, not through the renting out of your materials or through selling stuff. And therefore, in the case of a driver of a car, we could break down the rate based on how much you pay the driver for his time and how much you're paying him for the usage of his car. And the boss would only have to pay for the driver's time, not for the usage of the car. And we discussed also a possibility that there's a difference between a poel and a koblin here. That a poel, so you could say he could only work during those hours for one boss, so he gave up other bosses to work for you. But a koblin could take on as many jobs as he could squeeze into his day, and therefore you didn't necessarily stop him from taking on other jobs. And then we mentioned it all really would come down practically to what the practical facts are. Could he really have done other jobs the same day at the same time frame? And then we talked a little bit about what is the definition of a poel batel. That's what you would have to pay if you are chayiv. So the taz is basic standard of a half rate, and how it's really calculated based on what would a person accept as a salary if he didn't have to actually go to work, and how different circumstances might yield different answers in terms of that question. So what's on our agenda for tomorrow? Tomorrow we want to talk about just the inverse about the obligation and the davar avod for the worker to the employer, which mostly parallels what we've seen so far with some differences. And why are things different in a situation of holchu? If they've already gone to the job, why does that change the landscape? So God willing, we'll try to get those things discussed tomorrow and then begin chazara on the schedule that we've discussed. All right, everyone should have